Hello, and welcome to another episode of Robbinsdale Revisited. Catherine Lee Scott was born Marlene Catherine Kringstad in January 1943. She grew up on a farm in Robbinsdale at a time when the edge of the city still felt unmistakably rural. Long before she became known as an actress, author, and publisher, she was a Robbinsdale kid, shaped by family, farm work, and a strong sense of place. Her father was a Norwegian immigrant, and her mother was also of Norwegian descent. Their family came to Minnesota amid the upheaval and uncertainty of World War II. Like many families displaced by the war and its aftermath, they were seeking stability, safety, and a place where neighbors looked out for one another. Those experiences shaped the values they carried. They helped where help was needed, shared what they had, and built a supportive community through everyday acts of kindness. Farm chores came first, but creativity coexisted with practicality, and the family still found time for play. Her parents recognized her artistic instincts early and actively encouraged her interests in writing, reading, and performance. Like many Robbinsdale children of her generation, Scott grew up in a place that balanced small-town closeness with the pull of nearby big-time Minneapolis. She attended Robbinsdale High School, where her love of writing and performance began to take clear shape. She worked on the school newspaper, appeared in school plays, and quickly stood out for her storytelling ability. As a teenager, she won a Minnesota State Journalism Award for interviewing poet Carl Sandburg. This was an impressive accomplishment that foreshadowed her future as a writer. In 1961, she was chosen as Miss Whizbang and Miss Robbinsdale, roles that placed her front and center at community events and helped her develop confidence and public speaking skills. After graduating, Scott made a leap that felt enormous at the time, leaving Robbinsdale for New York City on a scholarship to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. As she began pursuing acting professionally, she took the name Catherine Lee Scott, signaling a deliberate transition from her Minnesota upbringing to a life in the arts. While studying and auditioning, she supported herself by working as a Playboy bunny at the New York Playboy Club, an experience she later chronicled with wit and honesty in her book, The Bunny Years. The pages vividly capture the contrast between her grounded, Midwestern roots and the glamorous, often challenging Mad Men world of 1960s New York. Scott soon began landing professional acting work, appearing in commercials and on television before achieving national recognition as Maggie Evans in the gothic daytime television series Dark Shadows. That role launched a career that would span decades, including film and television acting, a successful life as a novelist, and later her work as a publisher. Despite her success, Scott has never lost sight of where she came from. Again and again, she has pointed back to Robbinsdale, her parents, farm life, and the amazing education she received in District 281 schools as the foundation that made everything else possible. We spoke with Catherine by Zoom from New York on her 83rd birthday. So Catherine, thank you so much. We're so grateful that you're here today, and we'd love to hear more about your life growing up in Robbinsdale and all of your good memories.
Well, thank you, Crystal, and thank you, Pete. I'm really very pleased to be talking about Robbinsdale. I have such wonderful memories of it. I have to tell you that today is my birthday. I'm 83 years old. I was born January 26, 1943, and those were the war years. So right after the war, our family, my parents and my two brothers and my little sister, were the first family that was able to book passage back to Norway, mainly because it was too dangerous in the North Sea with ordnance and everything. But my mother was able to convince everybody that because my father had a farm in Norway, we could go back. So we did, and we lived there for a while. And my baby sister was not well. And so we had to return because a war-torn country was not the place for my sister. So we came back, and when we returned, my father, who is a farmer, bought a farm in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. And that farm was at, if I remember our address, it was 3355 Zane Avenue. And it was on the corner of Zane and, Douglas Drive. Oh, this is terrible. I can't remember. 36th Avenue. 36th Street, whatever. So we were right on the corner there. And it was a small farm, but it was a beautiful farm. We had a hill that, you know, we grew cabbage and corn, but that hill during the wintertime became a sledding and tobogganing and skiing mecca for every kid in Robbinsdale. My father loved children, and he always hired every kid in the neighborhood to work on the farm, anybody who wanted to earn in, you know, a little pin money. And we also, we could ice skate there. We also had a woods. And we used to pretend that there was a wicked witch that lived in the woods because there was a little stone foundation. It probably dated back maybe, oh, it could have gone back maybe 75 years, 50 years. And all that was left of it was the stone. And we used to pretend that there was a wicked witch that lived there. But my brother and I worked on the farm. My father went to market every morning. He sold produce largely to supermarkets like Super Value and also to the finer restaurants in town. He really grew wonderful vegetables, and you will be amazed that this little farm grew everything from cabbage to several different kinds of onions and carrots, corn, three different kinds of beans, you know, yellow wax beans, green beans, runner beans, and so on. I think we grew onions for a while. Those were the chief crops, but we also had crab apples and blackberries, currants, raspberries, and what else? But as you can tell, I mean, it was really a market farm or a truck farm, whatever the term is. And I loved growing up on the farm, mainly because, as I said, my father loved children. And we had all these cabbage crates, and we were allowed to take these cabbage crates and build forts and castles and stages. We were always putting on plays there. And my Auntie Pat worked for a bridal shop, and all of the discarded bridal dresses and formal wear she would give to me. And so all of my girlfriends in the neighborhood, you know, little 7 and 8 and 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds used to love to come over, and we put on the dresses and then we'd make up plays to go with them, or we would have parades. We had parades every other day up and down 36th Avenue. So it was really a sort of an idyllic childhood, not just for us, but I think for a lot of the children in the neighborhood. There were just so many children there. And in the beginning, we went to Lee Avenue School. And then when Adair was built and Miss Fair became the principal there, it was a wonderful woman, we all went to Adair. We could walk to school. And my mother got a job working in the school kitchen. She was one of the very first women who got a job outside the home among her friends. It was a bit scandalous, I remember, because people wondered if my father couldn't afford to take care of us, that my mother had to go to work. The truth of the matter is that my little sister was chronically ill because she had a problem at birth, and she was mentally retarded. And when my sister had to be put in a residence, because she couldn't be cared for at home. She was profoundly mentally retarded. My mother found solace in going to work, and she turned that job into a career. She became a head cook. She wrote a cookbook, Mom's Cookbook, and it was a fundraiser for all of the cooks, but my mother had such a good time with it because the book used all of the school recipes, but she adapted them so that, you know, if you were head of a Cub Scout troop, Girl Scout troop, you had to, you know, cook for the PTA or a church group. You could go to Mom's Cookbook
And if you were looking for potato salad for 50, potato salad for 20, potato salad for 75, you would find all of the measurements in there. I still have a copy of that cookbook and use it. So those are some of my earliest memories, along with discovering the Robbinsdale Library. It was the most wonderful. It was a little square building, brown stucco, and I used to go there every week. And what I remember the most, well, I know that when I walked in, went around the desk and into the back, two sections over, I would find all of my Betsy Tacy Tibb books by Maud Hart Lovelace, and those were my favorites. I read them over and over again, and I was a huge reader. The only books that we really had in the house were the sorts of books that a lot of people in Robbinsdale would have. I think there was a very active Encyclopedia Britannica door-to-door salesman who probably sold books to every household in Robbinsdale. Everybody had them. And I started off with A, and I worked my way all the way through. I just read it like a novel. I think my brother did too. But, you know, that was our reading. And we lived on the farm until I was 12 years old. And then my father sold the farm to a developer. You wouldn't recognize it now. There are houses there. I hope they appreciate the creek, because I think the creek is still there. But of course, the woods are gone. And the meadow where my father grew most of the cabbage, but that's all houses. If I were to tell you that there were at least 50 kids in that neighborhood, I'm probably pretty accurate. And you would be amazed, because this was right after the war, how many kids in my classroom, you know, didn't have dads. We forget all of that now. I also remember that our phone number was Highland 3536. There were no area codes. There were no area codes. There were no zip codes. There was television. We watched on Saturday night. We'd watch Show of Shows, and I think it was Gunsmoke, but we loved Sid Caesar, and on Saturday morning the Lone Ranger, and it was black and white, and there were three channels. And one thing that I will remember too, on Saturday morning, they would run this long, long list of soldiers who died in the Korean War, and you were just mesmerized by so many names. Actually, Korean police action, to be accurate, but that was explained to us, and we understood. So there were a lot. I bring these things up because if this is meant to be an oral history, there's so many things that you wouldn't know about Robbinsdale. The fact that it was very rural. My dad wasn't the only farmer. And it was a very lower middle class town. I don't remember anybody being rich. No, I don't remember anybody being rich. There were different levels of being sort of poor, put it that way. But it was, I don't remember very much industry there. But I do remember that there was a wonderful little theater. I think it turned itself into a dry cleaner. But I remember going there with my dad. He loved movies too. And he just took me to the very first movie I ever saw, which was The Boy with the Green Hair. And it was a film directed by Dorie Sherry. How do I remember that? And I remember it was just a small theater. You know, I don't suppose more than 50 people could sit in the... Of course, there weren't that many people in Robbinsdale. But the big, exciting thing that happened when I was a girl is that the Terrace Theater was built. And that was a palace. I remember going there. You dressed up. I mean, well, not on a Saturday morning. I mean, kids. It was full of kids on a Saturday. But that was a place where you kind of spruced up a bit to go. And I remember one couldn't believe the concession stand, the smell of popcorn and all of that candy in one place. But I saw For Whom the Bell Tolls there, and oh my gosh, so many films. I just loved the Terrace Theater. And I was part of that little activist group. I was living in London, I think, at the time. But, you know, trying to keep the Terrace Theater. Well, that was a lost cause, but I did love that place. And as far as the other places in Robbinsdale, Schweigert meet. I went to school with Johnny Schweigert. And in fact, when I was 17, I guess, I graduated from high school, and they had the Miss Robbinsdale contest that summer. And at the last minute, they needed another girl. I think SNL, there was a place called SNL in this little shopping center, and they wanted to sponsor a girl. So they asked me, and I mean, the whole homecoming court, you know, everybody was, up for that Miss Robbinsdale thing. And this is one of the strangest things that ever happened to me. Something happened that summer. I was such a runt. I was really skinny and short. And then all of a sudden I grew like, and I remember I wore my high school prom dress for the thing, and Red Sahaki, who was he was my gym teacher, for God's sake, but he was also coaching football, and he was also mayor of Robbinsdale. This is typical of small town life. And there was Red Sahaki walking down this long line of 27 girls, and he stopped in front of me. And I thought he made a mistake. And he put the crown on my head. And you can see the photograph of me. I mean, I look absolutely shocked. I was so shocked. They had a dance at the youth center, which was on the second floor of the fire department. And I didn't have a boyfriend at the time, and I hadn't thought to organize myself for it. So I borrowed Jimmy Schweigert, who was actually dating a girlfriend of mine, and he took me. And it was just, I don't know, innocent times, I have to say. It was just really fun. And my father, my mother, they were flabbergasted. I mean, everybody was saying, who? But it was really fun. The only thing is that I went away to college, and every weekend I had to be back in Robbinsdale or someplace in Minnesota, riding on the back of a convertible in a parade. And that was actually fun. First of all, I love public speaking. It gave me a chance to speak publicly. And that I really liked. But otherwise, it was one parade after the other, and seeing all of these little adorable small towns, even smaller than Robbinsdale, and just riding in a convertible, waving. I had three dresses, and depending upon the weather, that determined which dress I would come home and put on and go to this thing. Anyway, and then I was in the Aquitennial that summer. Again, wonderful. I met the most wonderful group of girls, and it was really a fun thing to do. And I think I was one of the first Miss Robbinsdales. But I love telling people now that I was Miss Whiz Bang Days. It gets a laugh, obviously. The other thing that I remember, I got a scholarship to the Northwestern University the summer I was 16, and I applied in both journalism and theater. I got a scholarship in theater, and I took the train to Chicago and went to Evanston for the summer. This was a turning point in my life because that really meant that, I really found what I wanted to do. I mean, act and write. And toward the end of that summer, there had been the big coup in Cuba. Batista had been tossed out, and I thought, I don't want to go back to my senior year in high school because all of my friends graduated. I wanted to go to Cuba. So I wrote to my brother asking him to clean out my savings account, send me the money. I was going to take a bus to Florida and then take the boat across to Cuba. And I was sure Castro would welcome me in open arms. And I knew how to drive an Ellis Chalmers tractor, so I figured I'd get a job harvesting sugarcane. This was my big plan. And my parents got wind of it, and they drove out to Evanston with my kid brother to pick me up. That was not fun. It was a long ride home. My father was not happy. It was in the middle of harvest. That was so then I endured my senior year in high school. The other wonderful thing that happened, Carl Sandburg Junior High opened up, and they brought Carl Sandburg out. He was an amazing poet, and I was assigned to interview him. So I read all of his poems, the Chicago poems, and then my father said that he had met Carl Sandburg down in Seven Corners of Minneapolis. You know, that it was a place for hobos and artists, and you know, and my father, you know, and when he came over from Norway, kind of hung out there along with all the other Norwegians and belonged to a dance group and a theater group and whatnot. And then he also knew Brenda Uhland, who was quite famous back in the day. And he said, Brenda Uhland will probably be there, and described her. And then my mother suggested that I wear the red wool suit that I made in home ec, because I'd stand out. Well, I did, because, you know, they had KSTP and WCCO and all of these places from Fargo and as far away as Chicago. And I stood there with my little steno notebook, and Carl Sandburg called me up to stand at the desk. I think he was quite giving the bird to the, you know, the media. And he asked me to read my questions, and he would answer them. Of course, I was writing out my answers. Anyway, I wrote a piece for the Robin's Tale newspaper, and I was so excited. I won the state award in journalism, and I think my proudest moment is on award day. I was called up to get my award, and then I was back at my locker, the captain of the wrestling team came up to me and congratulated me. I didn't even think he knew who I was, but I, you know, athletics, that was the big thing. Theater, journalism, you know, that didn't count for anything. And then the other thing is that I won a state award in drama. I did Strindberg's Miss Julie, and that was amazing. Again, meeting all of these people from the other schools and competing for that was exciting. That was really fun. So those are the standout things that I remember. And I haven't given you a chance to ask a question, but if I didn't tell you everything, I would start forgetting. My memories of Robbinsdale are just so happy. And in school, you know, I was the I was the kid that, you know, hung out with the theater department and the journalism, you know. I wasn't the sporty one. I wasn't, you know, homecoming cheerleader, mm-hmm. kind of a gal. I really wasn't. So the fact that I went to such an amazing school, District 281 is a blessing. I mean, I couldn't have got a better education had I gone to a private school. And the fact that I was in every single play during my whole time in school, and I had that kind of support in speech and theater and journalism, Ms. Linscog, was amazing. Another thing you should know is that in my junior and senior year, when I was, you know, involved with the school newspaper, every single person in my journalism class in Robbinsdale High School went on to a career in journalism. I mean, John Stoltenberg, Lear's Magazine, he's written a number of books. Dan Wasco, I think that's Minneapolis Star Tribune. Diane Sims started her own advertising agency. She later married that footballer, Ellen Page. Oh, you can't imagine. Every single one of her students went into journalism in some form or another, starting magazines or, you know, becoming editors, managing editors of newspapers. That's pretty remarkable. You should be proud of that.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, Catherine, this is so amazing. You know, I've been curious, how did your family decide to go to Robbinsdale? Did they have family here already, or how did that happen?
When my father came over from Norway, he had he first had his aunt who lived on a farm in North Dakota with Jim Wenstrom. Her name was Anna, and his name was Jim Wenstrom, and he was I think he was the first baby born in that territory. And he went on to become the first senator out of North Dakota. And he had a big farm, and my father worked his farm, and then he moved to Minnesota and started working on farms, eventually buying a farm. And he had another cousin who lived in Minnesota, and that's in Osseo or something like that, I believe. And he worked there. And then I think that when we went to Norway in 1946, he had a farm in Norway that he gave to the next oldest brother. He had a family of 9 brothers and sisters. So I think that having sold the farm in Minnesota to make that trip to Norway, he had some money to buy a little farm in Robbinsdale. I think Robbinsdale, because it was North Minneapolis, it was still farming country, and you could buy a decent farm for not very much money. I remember when all of those houses were being built along, what is it called, Lake Something Drive. Sort of an extension of 40, you go up 42nd Street. I don't know. When those houses were built, when I was a little girl, I was probably maybe 10 or 11, 9 maybe, those houses were only $13,000, and they were like mansions. You know, they really were. It was $13,000. So if my father bought his farm for, I don't know, you know, a few thousand dollars, that's probably what it was. You know, we didn't have money. We really didn't. But then nobody did.
And it sounds like you had such a great family that your parents did a little bit of acting. Did I read that they did skits and acting around town?
They did. Both of them loved the arts. Both of them could sing. They were wonderful dancers. They belonged to a Norwegian folk dancing group. And they started doing theater together. And that was, and again, I'm talking about way back when, you know, the hub for the Norwegian community was really around Lake Street and Seven Corners and, you know, that area, around where the Mindekirken is, you know, the Norwegian Lutheran Church. They really involved themselves in those kinds of cultural things. And then they started writing plays. And that was always a lot of fun because my mother wanted to rehearse. My dad didn't want to rehearse. So there was always a lot of carrying on before they went someplace to do something. My father was very funny. And he was a wonderful public speaker. And he was president of the Sons of Norway for a while. And both of them were very, very involved in DFL politics. They were very supportive of Humphrey Freeman and so on. And in a way, I think that they instilled that in my brother and me. I keep referring to one brother. I have two, but the other one is younger, so much younger. So, you know, he didn't get the belly full of it that we did.
And we'll be continuing our conversation with Catherine Lee Scott on the next episode of Robbinsdale Revisited.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one. City every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.